Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many paths of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though that might feel counterintuitive, just like the nightingale singing out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist, and thank you for joining me today. It's great to have you with me. How's summer going for you? The warmer weather often gives us the impetus to eat more healthily. But have you noticed how much more difficult it is to find good, filling, nutritious food these days? I'm not even talking about UPFs or ultra-processed food here. The fruit and veg that you buy in a supermarket just doesn't have the same taste or texture. Even some of the organic options aren't great. And it's not as satisfying either. Then there's the bland-tasting meat and farmed fish that's a completely different kettle of, well, fish. Sorry about that. But if you put it next to the wild version, it just doesn't compare. Never mind the damage to the health of the environment, the animals, and us as a result of factory farming. It's a dream of mine that everybody might one day have the opportunity to eat a diet that's as free of nasties as possible and as nutrient-rich as possible. Just think, there would be no need to supplement with vitamins and minerals, and we could get what we needed straight from our food. Unless we got sick, of course, and needed to give ourselves a boost, perhaps. Okay, so maybe that's a pipe dream, possibly only achievable on a small scale right now. But you can imagine how excited I was the other day when I met a couple near where I live in Scotland who are putting just such a dream into action. I was so excited, I had to invite them onto the show to talk about it. You see, I found out that Alex Gomans and his wife, Simone, are on a mission to build a life of health from the ground up, to promote well-being through microgreens and other nutrient-dense foods at their steading in the Fife countryside. Now, steading is a mostly Scottish name, I think, for a small farm. The couple, originally from Ireland, were living in Canada until fairly recently. So, of course, my first question when I paid them a visit to look around was this one.
How come you ended up in Fife?
Okay, so...
Great question.
I guess the easiest answer for that would be, honestly, it was the price of land and property. We always knew we wanted to do what we're doing now, which I'm sure we'll get into. But the price and I guess the universe led us over to Fife. We started looking around Ireland and maybe down south a bit more in the Cotswolds, but it was just too much to bear, to take it all. So we kept looking further and further north, and we eventually rented somewhere in Fife. It was kind of like our hub to go and look at other places around Scotland. We went to Aberdeenshire, Stirling. We even explored out west a little bit in Ayrshire as well. And it just happened by chance. We were taking our dog for a walk down to the beach at Shell Bay and driving down this road. And I always said to my wife, Simone, that I really like this road every time we came down it. And then one day we came down and there was a Retty for sale sign. And
that's one of the local estate agents,
yeah? Yes, yeah. And we had a peruse online. We just saw the outside that you can see on the road. We had no idea there was 10 acres attached to it as well. So we were pleasantly surprised. We looked online and this was the ninth place that we had put a bid on. And we are kind of losing faith a little bit. Eight times being turned down and it... worked out, and this ended up becoming home for the last 2.5 years now.
Brilliant. And so then what we haven't really gone into is why you left Canada.
Yes. So I guess for a lot of people, COVID wasn't a blessing. For us, COVID turned out to be a blessing for us.
Still tough, but definitely a great time for us to pause.
Yeah.
And reflect. that we just didn't have in our lives that time before to do that together.
Yeah, because Simone was working in oil and gas in Calgary. I was director of Western Canada. So 6 months of the year, I was either in a plane or a hotel.
Mm.
And we're just always busy, busy, busy. Yeah. We obviously had life things to do as well on top of our full-time jobs, which anyone who does full-time work knows that it isn't 40 hours a week. And COVID allowed us to pause and actually think, like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And health was always a big thing for both of us. I lost my dad in 2012 when I was just 21. He had always had heart attacks and strokes as we were growing up. There's times where my mom would have to pick us up from our dad's because he had had a heart attack and he was getting rolled out in an ambulance. And then it was just, it wasn't the nicest as a young boy to see your dad do that. And I kind of just remember thinking, it's like, if I have kids, I don't want them to see me like that. So that's when I went into personal training as my career profession, coming from a BSc in zoology from Trinity College. I went straight into fitness.
Because you are originally from Ireland.
Originally from Ireland.
Unless, in case nobody could hear the accent.
Yeah. And kind of fitness then in Canada kind of took hold, became a personal trainer. And then after a few years, I was running the club. And then after another year, I was director of Western Canada. And I had noticed that we had, I had 250 trainers that worked for me, and we had over 3,000 clients. And some would get great results, and others wouldn't. And when you go and seek personal training, you're most of the time you're not doing it because you're feeling very good of where you are health-wise. You're doing it because, I've tried everything else on my own, nothing's worked, this has to work. And when it doesn't work, that was their Hail Mary pass. If that doesn't work, then they pretty much give up and say, okay, I guess I'm supposed to be overweight. I'm supposed to have these health conditions. It's just the way I am. It's my genetics. But without the right access to the quality food, they are always fighting an uphill battle. So we really wanted to become a one-stop shop that you can come in, get your food, get your training, your workout, your treatment, your me time, your peace time, whatever it is that you need. We want to have all of those options available for whatever people need at that time. And that's what we hope to bring at Steady & Co. That's our thing here.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a worthy mission. So so you've both ended up here. You've got this property, which is a beautiful property. I've just had a walk around. And you, from what I can see, what you're doing is you're pretty much tackling, eventually, not immediately, but eventually tackling health from the very root, literally, up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the land, first of all. So one of the things that I know is very close to your heart is this, well, it's not a notion, it is a fact, that good soil produces good food.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that you're working on at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, so our mission statement at Steady & Co. is building a life of health from the ground up.
Yeah.
And that literally means from the ground up. So the easiest way to solve any problem is start with the first building block, and that typically translates into everything else. So same thing as if you're training a client, you make sure that their ankle, if they're doing a squat, that their ankles and their feet are planted properly, and then the squat movement turns out perfectly. The same thing goes with our food production. You start with the right compost or the right soil, then the plant takes care of themselves. The plants were here before we were.
Yeah.
And until we started meddling with it, then issues started to arise.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to bring it back to the basics. We kind of focus on the microbes in the soil by making biologically complete compost. So I'm a certified soil lab technician. So I analyze the biology of our soils, And then I make any changes necessary to make sure the right microbes are in. And then I let the seed and the plant do the rest of the work itself, what it was bred and born to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is the very first step of everything that you do here. Now, but I got to know you because you also have a microgreens production unit. Now, that obviously isn't outdoors. It's not out in the wild. We'll talk about all the other things that you've got out there. I've just met a rather friendly ram of yours out there.
Good old Bond.
Who was very annoyed when I left him and wasn't continuing to give him nose scratches. But, so the microgreens, that's running in parallel with everything else because that's not outside. So, but you're using presumably an organic mixture compost to grow the microgreens in.
Yeah.
And tell me why microgreens are particularly useful. Tell me why we should go for microgreens in the first place.
Yeah, of course. So a lot of the times when you're trying to make changes into your diet and kind of embark on a healthier lifestyle and way of living, it can be a bit ominous when you have to see the amount of vegetables you need to go in to replace the nutrients and get what you need out of them. And with microgreens, they're tiny nutrient-packed little warriors that have 40 times the nutrients of their fully grown counterparts. So whether you eat a whole kohlrabi or 30 grams of kohlrabi microgreens, you're getting more bang from your buck from the microgreens. And it's an easy, versatile way to get it into your diet. You can chuck it in a smoothie with lots of fresh berries, fruit, ice, honey, whatever. And you can satisfy your sweet tooth, but as well put some good back into your body as well.
Yeah, or put them in a salad. You know, add them to a salad. It adds a bit of variety, adds a bit of taste. And as long as the salad is hopefully an organic or at least, leaves that have been grown without pesticides and nasties.
Exactly.
And that's really good for you. And that's one thing that you're very clear about here as well, isn't it? There's no nasties.
No nasties.
As I call them.
Yeah, so absolutely no synthetics, no pesticides, no herbicides, no synthetic fertilizers. We do have fertilizers, but that comes from our ducks and from our chickens.
Yes.
And they do the fertilizing for us, so we both work full time as well as we're setting up this this venture. So it's going to stand to us as we get all these different enterprises going. But we have to make it as simple as possible to do the most with the little amount of time that we can.
Yeah.
And if we can have animals do the majority of the work for us, then that is free labor, as far as I'm concerned, and it's the way nature intended.
But it's the way it's always been done, I mean, until quite recently, isn't it? I mean, you know, in the old days, you would have your chickens, you would have your ducks, you would have, you know, your sheep grazing, you'd have a cow, and maybe a pig or two.
Yeah.
And all of the livestock helped to give the manure to the land, which then allowed you to grow vegetables and food that was full of nutrients.
Exactly.
Yeah. So basically what you're doing here is you're kind of going back to that natural cycle of producing good food the natural way. And so just as we're talking about the food, so you've just shown me around and you've got a little market garden. So you've got the microgreens, but you've also got a little market garden, which is looking very promising right now. And that's going to expand, isn't it?
Yes. So this was our first year with the market garden. We've done the no-dig method using learnings from people like Richard Perkins, Charles Dowding, and we are complete amateurs when it comes to growing vegetables. We've done the few, like, kind of, you have your tomato plants in the windowsill and things like that, but this is our first year going. We've put in 23 different varieties to see what works and what doesn't in the Scottish climate. But one thing we're also learning after being here almost 3 years is that the Scottish climate also isn't predictable. But we are seeing lots of success with the likes of, we did have, I think it was for maybe 2 days, we had some caterpillars on our Brussels sprouts, and then we had some green fly on our broad beans. So what we did was we just took the stem off that had the green fly and the broad beans, and then we gave that to the chickens.
I was going to say, did you let the chickens loose on them?
So yeah, so then they got protein and they broke that down. And then we would pick the caterpillars off each morning. It's a little bit tedious, but we'd rather do that than spray some chemical on it and then just be done with it. So we pick off the caterpillars each morning, and then that worked as a nice, delicious breakfast for the chickens and the ducks as well.
Yeah.
And I literally, or Simone and I literally did that maybe for 3 days. And now, no green fly, no caterpillars on it again.
Yeah. And you see, that's also part of the ecosystem, isn't it? Because if you've got poultry, poultry do eat insects. And they will keep your gardens, market garden or whatever, they'll keep them free of some of the worst pests. Yeah.
Yeah. And everything from what I've reading and what I've been told is that your first kind of 3 years when setting up a new no-dig market garden are always going to be the toughest.
Yes.
That's when it's an abundance of new food for all these insects and all these pests. Yeah. And they spread the message around. And like, here, we've got this.
They do. I've had experience of that. Yeah. They do.
and after 3 years, it's supposedly, once the soil underneath the no-dig kind of starts to break down, the biology tends to do its work. Then after that, it tends to be as easy as it can be to do the market garden. So in our first year of doing that, we've learned a lot. We know what works, what doesn't. It was a good year to do the learning because it's been very wet. But we've been surprised of the lack of pests that we're seeing just by following these methods of Richard Perkins, Charles Dowding, and having the animals play a part in the market garden and not completely cordoning off the market garden from the animals, but allowing them to go in and do their thing.
Yes, fantastic. They've got quite the little ecosystem developing there. And isn't that just what gardening's all about? Well, to me anyway. There's always a bit of trial and error, and you see what grows well and what doesn't, and sometimes the result's surprising. I always say that if you're new to growing, don't be intimidated. Put a plant in the earth, water it, and if the soil's healthy, you'll get something of a result. Seeds are literally made to sprout if you plant them and water them. It's not rocket science, although there is some science involved, as we'll hear. First, it's time to take a break. Stay with me. I'll be back with more from the Steading right after these messages.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my special guest today, Alex Gomans, and his wife, Simone, who have created a business on their small farm called Steading & Company, or Steading & Co. Now, before the break, I was talking about how we needn't get too anxious about the process of growing our food. I would say to anyone starting out, just give it a go. And Alex agrees.
And sometimes it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes it'll get very hot all of a sudden and things will start to shoot up, and maybe you won't get your 17 Romanesco or your 17 cauliflower or broccoli that you're hoping for, but it's starting something. At the end of the day, it's a plant that's in the soil that's releasing exudates into it. So that means that next year, next season, your soil is going to be better for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you don't necessarily get a ton of food off of it right away. There will be something that you'll get off it. And same thing as if you're trying to make a change in your exercise routine and your plan, something is always better than nothing.
Yeah.
And even just being able to get your hands in the dirt, put a seed into it, and the excitement and hope of watching something grow and become something.
That is the fun part.
Yeah. Yes. It's enough to have a mental benefit as well as a physical benefit as well. Even if nothing comes out of it, you've done something.
Absolutely. And even if you're selling microgreens, but you would encourage people to grow their own, wouldn't you? Because, and even that's fun. I remember at school when I was a kid, we used to grow cress on a bit of cotton wadding that mm-hmm. was wet. And mm-hmm. that was exciting, seeing that germinate yeah. and grow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we can do that at home as well.
Yeah, and the fun thing about microgreens as well is that if you have a market garden, you have to wait 2 weeks maybe sometimes before you see something come out of the ground.
Mm.
With microgreens, it's like every 30 minutes they're making a change.
Yes,
you go
exactly.
in and you see something, they're like, oh, it's green now. I'm like, oh, now it's a little taller.
I know, exactly. And I think that is exciting. And it's a great way, I think, it's how I started, partly how I started when I was a kid, is for children to watch mm-hmm. things grow and see how seeds germinate and what happens, you know. I think it's a brilliant way to get children interested in growing their own food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just getting back to the land here, we do have a really good quality of soil here anyway mm-hmm. in Fife. Are you finding that?
Yes. So my father-in-law, he owned a 2,000-acre grain farm out in Manitoba in Canada. We're all from Ireland, but we all emigrated out to Canada. And now we've all emigrated back
to Scotland.
And he just noticed the massive difference, obviously, in Manitoba, in the prairies, it's very sandy soil and gets very compacted. And it's just been conventionally farmed for decades. So it's void of almost all sorts of life. Here, it's been conventionally farmed for the majority, but there's also a difference in the legislation for what chemicals can be in the herbicides, the pesticides and everything here compared to that. And mm-hmm. even that small change, even though this is more clay, loamy soil mm-hmm. Up here, and as a result retains more water, and as a result allows biology to flourish a bit more as a baseline. So the biggest difference is that there's a better baseline to start off from here than there is if you're in North America, let's say. And we found that in just one season of kind of putting our new learnings, we're still new to this as well, and we're learning every single day. Every day is a school day over here. But even after one season, we're seeing exponential improvements. Like our 100-acre farm, which is just up the road, in one season of adaptive grazing or mob grazing the cattle there, the ponding has gone down maybe 60%. The neighbor's field still ponds, ours doesn't. We're seeing, saw in the market garden, like obviously no one's probably had to water their garden this year.
Not much, no.
But our market garden hasn't been drenched. We haven't had any root rot. We haven't had anything like that. Yeah, some things have struggled.
Yeah.
But once it dried up and the sun's come out, it's all just bounced back.
Yeah.
And this is just after 1 year. So we're really excited to see what happens once we get our own compost making enterprise going, and we can put our own biologically complete compost onto the ground and the extracts and the teas, outside of getting compost from a company we partner with, Caledonian Horticulture. That's just green waste compost, very simple, not very diverse in ingredients, but even that has a tremendous effect on what we're trying to do. And the purpose is keeping it as simple as possible, focusing on the microbes in the soil. How do we harness that?
Yeah, it really is a question, and it's fabulous to hear you talking about it. It really is. It starts with the soil.
Mm-hmm.
The soil has to be a good quality. It has to be packed full of nutrients. The nutrients get into the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then we eat those and we get those nutrients. But you don't just have plants here. I talked about your wonderful ram. Mm-hmm. He was very annoyed with me for not scratching his nose forever
mm-hmm.
Just now. You do have livestock.
We do.
And you've got chickens, you've got ducks,
mm-hmm.
As we've already talked about, who are really helpful in terms of keeping the garden fertilised. But you also have sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just telling me before we started recording, you've got belted Galloway cattle, which is fantastic to hear.
Yeah, with the Oreo cookie of cows.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yes, and just to explain to anybody listening who doesn't know, the belted Galloways are black cows with a big white stripe right around the middle. So they are the Oreo cookies of cows, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're kind of our staple I guess, land cows right now. We do have 100 odd more cattle on the ground, but they literally come in for the season as young steers, and then we sell them off now for finishing at the end of the season. But they are, the purpose of them is again to promote the biology in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
They stay on one patch of grass for 12 hours and then they move to the next cell. There's about 120 cows per half a hectare for 12 hours at a time. And then my wife's brother, my brother-in-law, Conrad, he is the ranch hand that manages all of that.
Right.
And from that, we're seeing almost a 2 kilogram weight gain per day in these cows. And there's nothing special in the field. It is just grass. We haven't put any cover crop on it. We haven't done anything like that yet. It's just 2 kilos a day on just normal rye grass.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm.
Yeah, that's very good. Excellent. And so then you've got the, so you're doing a sort of, you know, an all-round farming, but natural farming thing here. But then you can, you're taking it a bit further than that even, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got a nice runway of things to do here that we've put planning permission in now to get our, we're calling them our health huts, up on our 10 acres here at the Steading, so we can give everyone an immersive experience. So everyone loves to come a holiday in the East Nuuka Fife.
They do.
And loves to spend time down at the beach.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to do that, but also give them a chance to see what it's like to have food that's grown literally 500 meters away from where you're staying, that you can go and you can use our natural swimming pool. You can then go sit in the sauna and look at the view over the Firth.
Yeah, because these are all things you've got planned now. Natural swimming pool.
Natural swimming pool, sauna, fitness center, treatment room, 5 health huts going up.
Amazing.
On the ridge there that has the perfect sea view.
Yeah, you've got a lovely view over Largo Bay. Yeah
and it's just to give people a chance to actually slow down. Like we said, COVID was a blessing for us because it allowed us to slow down and think. So when you go on holiday, the chance is to slow down and think. And this is what we want to be able to give to others, where they can come up, look at the view, enjoy great food. They don't have to worry about stocking their cabin with food unless there's M&Ms or something like that. We're not going to be able to grow M&Ms in our market garden.
Are you going to allow people to eat M&Ms? That's the other thing.
They can do what they like. but then they have access to the food that's been grown literally less than 100 meters away and done the right way. And it just lets them have a taste and feel that it actually is different, that they'll eat something and they might eat less and feel more full. And then they go back after their 2, 3, 4 nights staying up in the health huts. And it just hits you when you get back and you have your first meal from an Aldi food shop.
Other food shops are available, but yes.
Yeah. But your first meal from a food shop where it's been all commercially grown. Yeah. You're like, okay, wow, that is different.
You can taste the difference, can't you? Yeah. And you feel the difference. And again, before we started recording this, we were talking about how you really do feel it once you've been eating. I think that's what people find when they go to places like southern Italy, where things are much more naturally grown and things are sun ripened and gorgeous. You really, it's a bit of a shock to the system when you get back home and you start eating things that you bought from the supermarket and you just think, it tastes very good, and it probably doesn't have the same nutrient value either.
No, and what we found when we were in our as corporate lifestyle and we thought we were living the dream, but it's like we'd have our dinner and then we'd be like, okay, what we snack on now?
Yeah,
what's for dessert? What's our evening snack? What's our before bed thing? And now, since we're fortunate enough to have the ability to grow our own food, now we've gone and done it, we have our microgreens, we have our vegetables, we have our duck eggs, we have our chicken eggs, we are full more, but eat far, far less.
Yep, that's my experience too. When you're eating nutritious food, you are satiated quicker and you do tend to eat far less. More on that too in a few minutes with some interesting insights from Alex's experience since moving to Scotland. Stay tuned for that. But first, it's time for another short break. Back right after we've heard these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today I'm reporting from a steading, or small farm, in Fife in Scotland. Before the break, we were talking about the difference we experience when we eat nutrient-rich food. And Alex Gomans, co-founder of Steading & Co. with his wife Simone, had further insights into how what we might call good food impacts the body.
I mean, I was worked in the fitness industry for 13 years as a personal trainer. Mm. When I first got to Scotland, obviously the stress of the move and everything like that played its part. But when I first got to Scotland, I was 110 kilos. And now, since we've been eating more of the food from our land, we've been more full with less, I guess, food on our plate, I've lost 25 kilos by doing nothing special except eating the food that's available to us on our land.
Yeah.
25 kilos, that's like 2 kilos a month and not doing anything amazing.
Yeah. But if you're living like this and you're growing your own food and you're cooking your own food and you know exactly what's going into that food, then it is far easier to be more healthy and, maybe drop a few pounds if that's, if you've been a bit too...
And even if that's what you want to do, like you mightn't even have a weight loss goal or a calorie deficit goal or anything like that, but everyone wants to have a nice meal.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to have a nice meal is to have good, honest food that's simple, that doesn't need a ton of ingredients. Mm. A salad that doesn't need your Caesar dressing on top to make it taste like something. Mm-hmm. Where you can just put lemon juice, olive oil, salt, pepper, some lettuce leaves, some microgreens, and then your tomatoes.
That's it. And that's perfect.
Boom, done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so would you also be doing dairy, or are you just going to leave that? Is that a bit too much to cope with?
Dairy isn't necessarily on our cards right now.
It's probably a bit too much of an investment and too much hassle as well.
Well, that, and we're more kind of going towards the finishing beef on the 100 acres.
Yeah.
Because we want to be able to provide like actual grass-fed and grass-finished beef to the public. Mm-hmm. A lot of the grass-fed beef you see in supermarkets now are grass-fed because they spend the majority of their life on pasture. But once they get brought back to mart and fat and finished off, then they're on grain.
I know. And you know, I was reading about that the other day, only the other day, and thinking, I never actually quite realised that.
Yeah.
That grass-fed doesn't necessarily mean grass-fed for the entirety of their life.
Typically they'll spend the last few weeks in a shed just munching on grain.
Yeah.
And what that happens is that completely overrides their liver, mm-hmm. which then shuts down any of their digestion. So they put on a ton of weight, but nothing's going into the meat. And you almost undo a lot of the good work you did by having them on pasture for the majority of their life. So we want to be able to completely finish them on grass.
Yeah.
And for that, we need to have the soil structure better because we can't have cattle on the land when it's a wet season like because they'll puncture the ground. But if we can increase the water infiltration of our soil through the mob grazing, then we can have cattle on for longer periods of the year, which means we can then finish cattle on grass and then we can produce that meat to the public. And grass-fed and finished beef has almost the same level of omega-369 fatty acids as a salmon would.
It's amazing, isn't it? I didn't know that either. See, I always learn something when I'm doing these things. And there are a lot of farms around here where they are doing a lot in terms of grass-fed beef and whatever. There's our Dross farm, which is near here, and I know that you know the people there, and they've been on this show before. And they have invested in cattle that you just leave outside all the time. You don't actually have to do anything with them. They don't even have to help them calve.
They
just go and have their calves. Their main problem with the calving is trying to find the calves when they've been born, because they just hide in the long grass, and you know, then they have to sort of search them out. But in their case, it's their cattle just stay out all the time. They're just grass-fed outdoor cattle.
And that's why we've wanted to partner with Ardross and be affiliated with them for our microgreens for now, and then with the other things that come after.
Yeah.
But they practice what they preach, and they have the same vision and mindset as we do, where the orchestra and nature should play the song and we don't need to intervene at all and start singing over it.
Yeah, no, it's a very nice way of putting it, yeah. Yes, so now that you're here, you're finding there's a community of people who are like-minded, farmers who are like-minded, and that you've got this beautiful place, and it's almost like you're creating this 360-degree kind of well-being hub.
Yeah, that's exactly the way we would put it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fantastic, and I don't know of anywhere that's like that.
Not yet. Well, it kind of all stemmed from, and I don't know if my wife Simone will remember this, but this kind of all stemmed from a trip we did during COVID again, because we couldn't travel anywhere. So we went from Calgary to Golden, BC, and we found a little Airbnb hut in the mountains where we stayed there, but we booked our little days out. We did whitewater rafting, we did paragliding, we did hikes, and we cooked outside. And we kind of just looked at each other. It's like, imagine we could just do this in different spots all over the world. Like, this was our business, where we just like set people up in different climates where they could experience what it's actually like to be there, rather than going to a big hotel and just doing the same thing that everyone does when they come and see that country. And so when we came here, we kind of just thought, it all started as like, what would we want if we're going somewhere? And wherever I go, I'd like to have access to fitness facility, whether I choose to work out or not, that doesn't matter. I like to know it's there. I need to have a sauna and or steam room there. I want to have a cold plunge, something cool to drop in. And I want to have good food at a moment's notice. And obviously a nice view and nice surroundings to be able to look at. And we kind of build that framework all around that, which we talked about, that I don't even know how long ago that was, maybe 6-7 years ago was when we had that discussion. And then we've kind of just embarked on that and said, okay, if we're going somewhere, what would we want? Would we want, because a lot of places where you can stay at Airbnbs and things like that, it's a code, you go in and then you enjoy your time.
Yeah.
We want it to be a little bit more high touch. If people want that, if they don't want to be disturbed, walk on up, go into your health hut and then have a nice time. But we want to offer the luxury services of a 5-star hotel, but also the simplicity of staying somewhere local that has a community feel to it. So when they come up, we'd love to be able to have concierge services for them when they come up. It's like, you come to the East Nooka Fife, you've never been here before. Yeah. It's like, what do I do?
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
we can book all that for them. The idea is you slow down and you have time to think. So yeah, I said at the start. So you just rock up. It's like, oh, what do we do today? Let's talk to the concierge.
Yeah.
And then they go, we get it all booked, we offer them what we think would be great at this time.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about food, because that's the nice thing about staying in a hotel. You don't have to worry about food.
Yeah.
And when you stay in Airbnb, you still have to go do the food shop.
And you're not exactly close to any shops around here. So you are kind of, I'm not going to say in the middle of nowhere, because nowhere's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I don't like using that terminology. But you are, you know, up a hillside, you're in the countryside, you've got a beautiful view of the sea, but you are not 5 minutes walk to the nearest farm shop.
No. And I mean, our farm will be the shop.
Exactly.
For them. That's exactly. the idea.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you do want other things, like you do want to have crisps, you do want beers for the barbecue, you want things like that, you want a glass of vino, that we can, that can all get picked up. But the majority, if you really didn't want to go anywhere, you still have breakfast, lunch and dinner taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you don't get at normal other Airbnbs that you would get at a hotel. But that's what we want to be able to offer in our health hut.
So it's a perfect offering. It's a perfect well-being, not retreat as such, but it's a perfect well-being holiday offering. So mm-hmm. you can stay fit. Eventually you'll be able to stay here, eat well, sleep well.
Mm-hmm.
I know Simone was saying earlier she's never slept so well as when she moved up this way. And then, and exercise. And there are so many beautiful things around you. It's perfect, really. It's a perfect holiday spot.
Yeah. And then not only that, obviously you get immersed in it if you stay here. But then we don't want it to be just for people that pony up and pay the money to stay here.
Mm.
We want it to be access to everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do stay here, you can take some of it home with you.
Mm-hmm.
You can take microgreens, you can take some vegetables, you can take a load of eggs, you can take some duck eggs, you can do it. So you can take a bit of your holiday back with you, but also then we get to feed the community around us too, because the community are going to be the ones that decide whether we're successful or not.
Mm. Yeah, and community is very important as well. Mm-hmm. So involving the community is really, you know, got to be part of your strategy. Well, I think it's fabulous what you're doing. I've loved looking around the place. I've loved meeting the animals, and especially your fabulous ram, who's a bit of a character. I wish you all the best with it. I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, before we wind up this chat, where can people find out all about you and keep in touch with you and, you know, follow you?
Yeah, so obviously we have our website, www.steadingandco, so that's steadingandco.com. But also we're quite active on our socials as well, on Instagram, and that's steadingandco on the Instagram. So you give us a quick follow, you can log into the website, and the website and the Instagram, you'll be able to stay up to date with everything that's changing year in, year out, what's being added to our offerings. And right now on the website, you can place your orders in for pasture-raised chicken eggs. We'll be adding duck eggs to the website soon, and then we have our microgreens on offer right now.
Brilliant. Do you send out chicken eggs in the post?
We deliver.
I was going to say, not sure I'd want to buy eggs online like that. And let's just say it'll be a while before all the other elements are added to this whole setup. You know, it's a project that's going to go over a few years.
A long-term project. We hope to have the first health hut or two up, ideally by next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Have the first one up.
That'd
and
be great.
Then in the years coming, there'll be more huts added, treatment rooms added, some natural swimming pool added, sauna. So it's something to stay tuned for, because it'll be something new added every year.
Well, I love it. And I love the well-being, the whole, you know, just embracing health is life. I mean, you know, and it's not just about our lives. It's about all the living things around us and the things that we grow, you know, the food that we grow, the animals that we have around us. Brilliant. Yeah, fabulous. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much, AJ. It's our pleasure.
Alex Gomans with the last word there, and it really was exciting to see what they're doing on the land they now call home. I wish them all the best with it, and I'll be back to see how they're progressing at some stage in the future. You know, we can all grow some food of our own, even if we live in a tower block and don't have access to a garden or an allotment. Some herbs do very well on a windowsill. I've grown chilies very successfully like that, and of course, we can grow microgreens ourselves. There are plenty of kits out there to get you started, and they really do pack a punch nutritionally, so it's well worth it. The days when we could all keep livestock in our backyard are gone, but we can adopt more soil and eco-friendly methods in our gardens if we have them, and turn a lot more of the space over to growing food. Is it just me, but these days I look at large manicured lawns in people's gardens and think, what a waste, when that area could be so productive and just as pleasing visually. I know you can't run around in a veg patch like you can on a lawn, but I'm sure there's a compromise to be made. Also, while we're on gardens, let's be kinder to the wildflowers. For example, if you have a lawn, allow some of that clover that you love to stamp out to grow. It can actually be beneficial for the lawn, and most of all, wildlife loves it, and it even has health properties that help us humans. Why not grow an entire clover lawn? It wouldn't have the scent of a chamomile lawn, but the other benefits would be worth it, surely. And with that thought, it's time for me to leave you. I'd love to hear how you're living your healthy life. You can message me on Instagram at Practical Alchemist or email me at jj@thepracticalalchemist.uk. Do check out my YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking, as well. And if you want to find out more about me, then head over to my website, which is thepracticalalchemist.uk. And if you're hungry for more health information, there's Health Triangle magazine. You'll find the link to that on the UK Health Radio homepage. For now, though, I want to thank you for listening. Do join me next time for more practical alchemy and more fabulous guests with great information on how to be naturally healthy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.